Good morning, darling Rage Nation. Welcome to episode 3 of our Rad as Fuck Women series. I'm super excited to share this episode with you. In this episode, I talked to Anna Voss of Owl Post Lettering, and we talked about all kinds of things, including being a business owner and a stay-at-home mom, both 2 full-time jobs at the same time, which are what she does, and a bunch of other really amazing things, including a really good discussion where we got deep about intersectional feminism, what that is, what it means, how we can be involved, which is really timely seeing as how we just came off of the weekend where we celebrated the 2nd annual Women's March. So I can't wait for you guys to listen, see what you think. Here's Anna.
Hello.
Hello. How are you, Anna?
I'm well. How are you, Molly?
Doing really well. Thank you so much for being on my podcast. I'm super excited to have you.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure to be here.
Mm-hmm. So for those people who don't know you yet, would you share a little bit about like what you do?
Sure. I own Owl Post Lettering, which is a very small business run out of my guest room in my house.
Mm-hmm.
I offer hand lettered goods, some original prints, but I also do mugs and totes, and I have some other tricks up my sleeve for the next few months, hopefully. And so I teach classes at the Brainery, and I'm a full time stay at home mom for my kids.
Which is like 15 full-time jobs all at the same
time. Yeah, exactly. I'm like full-time at both. And, you know, it's fine.
Yeah, it's awesome. Well, it's funny because I just spoke to another friend via Instagram, Kate Tagney, and she's the same. She does hand lettering and painting, and she's also a stay-at-home mom. And it's like, it's crazy.
It is. Yeah. Lots to juggle, but it's all good.
Yeah, it is. So I would love to hear more about your story, basically, so you can start like wherever you want to start. I just want to hear more about like Anna and how you've come to where you're at.
Okay. It's a winding path, I think.
Yes.
I went to college for vocal performance. I was at Roberts Wesleyan and had a really great time there, but decided after I graduated that I didn't want to pursue opera full time. Mostly as like I wanted to have a more normal schedule. I wanted to be in one place. I actually hate practicing, it turns out.
So, I mean, it's a good thing to know.
Yeah, before I like spend out more money on grad school. So, So I took a year. I was waiting tables and working in an office. And then I met my husband the summer after we had both graduated. He went to RIT and I was at Roberts. And we started dating. And so I really wanted to stay in Rochester. So I just was like working and waiting tables. And then we got engaged. And then I was, you know, I worked at a different office for a while, did customer service, put in my time.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went back to Roberts and worked there for a while until I had Ruby, our daughter, who's 4. And then I started staying home with them full time, with her full time.
Mm-hmm.
And I just loved it. It was the first job that I really felt more fulfilled at, and there's enough variety obviously with being home with your kids that like it's easy to get bored and hard to get bored at the same time, you know,
right?
Because at the same, and on one hand, you know, you've got lots to do, you can go out and do different things, you can meet up with people in the day, and on the other hand, you're sort of a slave to a very tiny tyrant of your own creation.
Yes. So. I know that all too well.
Yeah.
Two tyrants, which you have 2 as well.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. Yeah. So after my son was born, he will turn 2 in March.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing a lot of like nursing and Instagram scrolling, and saw a friend of mine had started posting some hand lettering that she was learning how to do. And I was like, I I didn't know that regular people could do this. I thought you had to be like a real artist, you know what I mean?
Right.
I was like, okay, well, tell me what pens to buy. I want to give it a try. And it really just like took off from there. Like me being like practicing every day, trying to find, you know, new ways to do things and learn, and eventually took an online course. And then that fall I started teaching at the Brainery. I've been teaching at the Brainery at pierogi making class for like 4 years, but I started teaching hand lettering because there really wasn't anybody doing that. So I've been doing modern calligraphy at the Brainery for like a year and a half now. And now I did a bunch of different lettering classes there, and I just like, it's the best job ever.
Yeah. So. Well, and I mean, and first of all, I love how you approach like being a stay-at-home mom as a career, because it is.
It is.
But a lot of moms don't approach it that way. It's just like, oh, well, this is the thing that we do, but it's true. There's so much like to it and nuance and things that you're managing. You're basically like the household manager.
And I think it really helps me to like, stay focused. And if I think about it as a, like a job and it's like work time. And then that also, I should have put my phone on do not disturb. That also helps me to like, encourage myself to do more like self-care, because I'm like, okay, if this were a real job where someone was, where I was showing up somewhere, they'd be giving me sick days and like vacation. So if I need to take time for me, like as long as I can arrange it, like I deserve that. You know what I mean? I think as mothers, sometimes we are taught to kind of ignore our own needs. And so I think it's really important. Like for me, it was a help, a helpful, like mental step to just kind of think of it as a job. One I really enjoyed and wanted to be at, but definitely.
I think that that's huge. And I think that that even that mindset shift would be huge for so many stay-at-home moms, because you're right. Like so many moms are just like, well, because it's the motherhood role, that means I should be like self-sacrificing and all of these crazy things that like sound noble, but are also like really bad for us.
Sure. Yeah. And self-sacrifice is obviously part of the job description, but if it's too much, it becomes toxic.
Right. And it's kind of like that thing of, I remember being younger and not understanding the whole metaphor of like, you take your oxygen mask first before you can help anyone else. And then being a mom, it was like, no, I get it, because otherwise you're going to pass out and then you're not helpful to anyone.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
So that's so huge. And I love, like, I also loved what you said about your just like revelation that anyone could do it. And I'd like you to talk more about like the whole being a real artist thing. Like, what does that mean to you? And now that you've been doing it for a while, do you feel like you are a real artist?
So yeah, that's a really interesting question. I think the, like, anyone can do it, mindset has really driven my teaching style. Cause I definitely want people to feel like they can show up to my classes with no, you know, unless it was like some kind of like level two or something, but like can show up to the beginner class and really feel like, okay, I can, it, you know, I don't have to have nice handwriting. I don't have to be artsy to like enjoy my time at this class. So I wanted to, you know, so it's really like informed, I think, how I teach in that way. But real artists, I am not trained as a visual artist, and I never really thought of myself as a visual artist. So I didn't feel like, you know, that I should be approaching something like visual and spatial. I've always thought of myself more as like a, like I'm not good with like directions or, you know, like I feel like, but I of course
I'm not either. And I'm a visual artist.
I just am not always like a very spatially aware person. So I was, I just like assumed that I couldn't do hand lettering or anything like related to that. But I've always loved how words look. I've always loved like the aesthetic of words and letters. I was like the kid painting song lyrics on my bedroom wall, like, with permission, but you know, that was like my favorite thing. Like I loved painting the words, even if it was just like my own handwriting larger, you know? And I was like always the one raising my hand to write on the board in school. So I just really always loved writing. And so when I found out that like you could just try it, I was like, oh, okay. So I got the pens and it turns out it's super hard. it's really hard to like make the shapes that you see before you like actually know what you're doing. So it was a frustrating like beginning, but I really, really wanted to learn it. So,
So do you see yourself as an artist now?
I oddly enough, I've recently started using the A word.
Good. You should.
Cause I mean, I do enough painting, like I think especially now that I've taken on some more watercolor painting, and I do a lot of watercolor lettering, and that's like kind of my real like zen place is with watercolor. So that feels a little bit more like I could say that I'm an artist, even more than when I was working like just with pens and markers and stuff.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting because, and I quote like Liz Gilbert on this podcast a lot, she's just like one of my muses, but one of the things that she talks about is like that we don't have to have permission to call ourselves artists. And I think especially as women, we like ask for permission everywhere.
Yes.
And like, that was one of the key pieces in my journey is just giving myself permission to be like, yes, I'm an artist.
Yeah.
I make art.
Right.
So I'm an artist.
Yeah.
And like, it's interesting too, like how many women, even like yourself, that you had such a struggle with calling yourself an artist, even though it's now like even what you do for a living, like you're making money from it and it's still a struggle. It's just so interesting to me because we all have that. Going off of that, my whole podcast is a lot about focusing on finding your voice. And so when I say that phrase, like finding your voice, what does that make you think of in your life? Maybe art, maybe other things as well.
Oh, good question. I think finding your voice can be a lot about finding out like who you are and what makes you happy and the way that you communicate that. I'm sorry. I'm just like mulling that over because I think it can be different things. Like you can find a voice in the way that you write or speak. You can find a voice like in your art. I think I'm finally like settling into more of my own style, which feels like finding my voice. I've been playing around a lot with, like I said, with like watercolor, watercolor lettering and layering. And it's just been like really freeing and settling for me. But I think it can also just be like finding your way and making sure that you're taking care of yourself. Like, that's been like a huge theme too for me, like the last year or so.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so interesting that you mentioned like self-care with finding your voice, because it's so true. Like you need to give yourself, in order to find who you truly are, you need to give yourself space for that. And I think sometimes as moms or even just as women in general, we struggle with like allowing ourselves to take up space and be heard and all of these things. So I guess a follow-up question I have to that is, it's funny because we were talking about the election in a previous interview and the girl I was talking to was like, let's just make him like he who must not be named.
Voldemort.
Right. Voldemort. Exactly. That's what I said too. Has that made any difference for you when it comes to like making art, like finding your voice? Has that been any sort of a catalyst since that's occurred?
Yeah, I would say so. I have definitely been like getting in touch with my feminist inner self. I've always considered myself a feminist, but I think I'm learning more about what it means to be like intersectional and to really live that out and not like, you know, women, we're trained as women to kind of make men feel comfortable. And so I'm really trying to like get over that. And I'm very grateful that the men in my life, like I have not had a lot of situations that make me feel scared or men that talk down to me. But I'm definitely like becoming more of a vocal, I hope, vocal feminist instead of just like a person who, you know, is appreciative of her,
right,
of her cushy existence. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I love that you said like being more of a vocal one, because I think that that's been a trend, especially since the election for women. And like, that's part of the whole reason why I'm doing this interview series is to just give that platform for all types of women to have a voice and to share their story and realize that their voice matters. Even if they think they're a boring person, they're not, they're amazing. So that's been really interesting, is to like talk to different women and find out where they are on that spectrum. But I do want to ask you, like, for people who don't really know, can you tell us more about what it means to be like an intersectional, like feminist?
Sure. So intersectionality refers to getting justice for like in more than just one way. So we could, a lot of feminist talk, I think, tends to, or at least used to, sort of circle around white women. So now there's a lot more talk about making sure that women of color, queer mm-hmm. women, disabled women, like every type of woman is being represented. When we talk about social justice, we have to think about like I actually went to a really interesting seminar on intersectionality at the, I went to the Gay Christian Network retreat, like conference last year with my husband. And I went to an intersectionality thing and he talked a lot about like, okay, you know, you could be working for justice, you know, on the part of the LGBTQ community, but we also need to be like simultaneously working for justice, like on the racial mm-hmm. front and on the feminist front. And we had to do this exercise where you had to like, basically like each group got a different amount of like quote unquote money. And you could spend that, like you had a limited amount of like money to buy these things that we take mm-hmm. for granted. So like holding hands in public or getting housing easily, or, you know, and some groups had like money to buy all but one of them. And they couldn't decide like which was most important because they're all equally important, right? But some of us had like, you know, we could buy five of them. So are you going to put walking home safely at night over getting housing without being discriminated mm-hmm. against? Or are you going to, you know, what's more important, being able to show public displays of affection or being able to like be legally married or being able to like not get murdered by a policeman and, you know, for walking home. So it was just a really interesting, like that has really been a lot, like eye-opening in the last year. Mm-hmm. And then to see it, especially through the lens of feminism, I think just making sure that all women are being represented and really realizing that like as a white woman, I have a lot to learn and that I like my voice matters, but is not always the most important. And so that I need to make sure that I'm listening and not like taking over the conversation. Like, ever.
Yeah, that's so good. You know? That listening, like in every situation. Right. And like,
yes.
Yeah. So how has that really expanded your perspective?
I think I definitely, I'm very timid on the internet not to like be combative about really anything because I don't like feeling like wrong or so I'm an internet listener anyway a lot mm-hmm. of the time. But I think it's just been a lot of like sort of food for thought more so than it's been so far that I could say really like it's put me into any kind of like action or anything, but I don't know.
Maybe. Well,
it's a boring answer, but I'm mostly just mulling it over.
No, I think it's good. And we need to take time to mull it over and have those conversations in person. I mean, conversations on the internet are so hard because there's no context, you know?
Right. Or tone of voice.
Right. Although I was really like shook by, I don't know if you saw it, like Sarah Silverman. She had like this tweeting thing back and forth with a guy who called her the C word, and like her response blew me away, and I was like, we can do way more of that stuff for everyone.
Oh my gosh, kindness works like so much better than that.
So like for listeners who don't know, like Sarah Silverman is a comedian, and she basically was called the C word by a man on Twitter, and instead of being combative or even just ignoring him, she reached out and was basically like, I can tell you're hurting, like tell me about it.
What happened to you to make
it
like this?
And then she ended up like, he ended up opening up and being vulnerable and talking about his abuse in the past and like apologizing to her. And then people from the internet ended up paying for like therapy and stuff for him.
It was like a truly amazing internet moment.
Absolutely. Before. Yeah. And so that has really put that thought in my mind, and especially when it comes to like feminism and all of that and intersectionality. Listening and trying to put yourself in the shoes of the other person and really like listening to understand and to hear is so much different from like listening to respond.
Yeah. And also not like going to someone with like expecting them to educate you, to spend their time like educating you, but to like just see what they're doing, like see what they're doing. If they have the resources to like point you in the right direction, that's great, but like as a just trying to do your own homework and be a listener in that way, like be an ally in the way that you're actually like educating yourself and not just like expecting someone else to be, hold your hand.
Right. You know what I mean? Yeah, exactly. Because it's like, it's almost another abuse to like, yeah. You know, if I were to ask, you know, one of my friends who's Black to like explain everything to me about the African American experience, yeah. and like, you know, right. it's just not helpful at all. I totally agree. Yeah. And yeah, so that's amazing that we have that opportunity to have those conversations. And especially as white women, I think it's so important what you said about like not taking over the conversation. But then also if we're in a room of a bunch of other white people, to not be silent when there's conversations about, you know, privilege, yeah. because that yeah. even like systemic racism is something that I've noticed that a lot of white people still really struggle to even see as a real thing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. having those conversations yeah. is so important. And I'm glad that it's good to hear from other women that we're like having them and learning things and all yeah. in the messy process together, basically.
Yeah.
So yeah. on next to that, moving on to the next thing, I'm wondering if you could give yourself, your younger self, a piece of advice, what would it be?
Oh my gosh.
I know.
It's hard because I feel like, so I always think like, what would have happened if I hadn't like, you know, quote unquote, like wasted my time in undergrad, because I'm obviously like not using mm-hmm. that a whole lot. But if I hadn't gone to undergrad and pursued, like if I hadn't done my undergrad degree, like I never would have moved up to Rochester. Right. I never would have met the friends and family that I have now. So it's hard to like, really, I guess my biggest thing that I would tell my younger self is just to not apologize for yourself or feel like you have to apologize mm-hmm. for yourself, and kind of just to like try to gain, like allow yourself to have confidence. I think that's a tricky two-edged sword mm-hmm. though too, because like I'm definitely a person who's prone uh-huh. to pride, I think. So that was like one of the really good things about getting out of the music industry before I really even got in it, was because I was nervous that it was going to be like not a good environment mm-hmm. for me, like tons of self-promotion. And I think at that point in my life, that would have ended up like kind of toxic, but there was other areas like that I think I could have been more confident in. So I don't mm-hmm. know. It's such a hard question.
Yeah. It definitely is. 'Cause it's true. Especially like, I know you're kind of like a nerd like me, but when you see like all of these yeah. things in Nerdy World about like time travel and like messing up your timeline by trying to fix something, yeah. like it's like appreciating yeah. where you've come from, because that's ultimately right. what built you into who you are. So it's hard to like right. think of that advice, because right. you're like, yeah, I wanted to be more confident, but if I hadn't gone through A, B, C, and D,
right.
I wouldn't mm-hmm. be here. So yeah, that's super interesting. I love it. So now that we're starting to wind down the interview a little bit, and I'm actually thinking that with like most of these interviews, I'm gonna want to do like a part two, because there are so many things we've touched yeah. on that we could definitely like talk more about. Mm-hmm. But so I have a couple of just like fun questions that I like to end the interviews out on. So the first okay. thing is, what is the weirdest thing you've ever done?
The first thing that comes to mind is camping in an abandoned Girl Scout
camp. Oh, that sounds creepy.
Like, immediately. it wasn't as creepy as it sounds, but we were definitely not supposed to be there.
So tell me more about this story, because I'm super curious now.
I had a friend who was just like, I don't know, he always was doing wild stuff, and like, so he organized this whole camping mm-hmm. trip for, there were like, I don't know, 8 of us or something. And we ended up going to this camp, and I didn't know, I think until I got there, that we were like, weren't supposed to be there. But I think you were allowed to like walk in it and be there during the day, but you weren't supposed to sleep okay. there. But we like found like a pavilion, and there was a big hole in the roof of the pavilion. So we set up a fire that like lasted us all nice. Weekend. We just like camped in the A-frames that I'm sure like weren't super safe, but we had a really fun time. Actually, it was like one of the best memories I have from like college.
That's fantastic. And you didn't get in trouble.
Yeah. We did not. Although we did think that we heard the like camp guy who was like his house. We like walked past to go uh-huh. in here. And the we thought we heard him at one point, so we are like hiding in the bushes, like in the dark, for what felt like forever, but I think it was like actually only like,
that's
two
so
minutes.
Funny.
But we would like, because we didn't want to get caught, but he wasn't even there. He was like on vacation or something. So anyway, it all worked out fine. But that's like my like weirdest, maybe my weirdest.
That's story. Fantastic, though. I love it. Thank you for sharing that. and welcome. To close out, because I get to also post music on my anchor station, I've also been asking ladies what your favorite song is right now. I know it's really hard.
It is really hard. Okay, so I have to say that my favorite song of all time ever is Love Shack from the B-52s.
I love it.
And it's just like all time. Like I've been listening to that song like since it came out as a very young child. My parents taught me like the tin roof rusted. I was like two and they taught
That's
me how
amazing.
To say that. Because they're also very beautiful. but let's see, my favorite song right now is, oh gosh, there's so many good ones. I usually get stuck in like a five album set. So I'm listening to like all the Dawes songs. I don't know if you listen to
Dawes is really good.
When My Time Comes is such a good song. That's like maybe one of my favorites right now. And most people,
yes.
Most people's probably the like.
So yeah.
Good. And then I'm like a Hamilton.
Yes.
Person, so
me as well. What's your favorite Hamilton song?
Yes. For it, for
oh my
sure.
gosh.
Yeah.
That song gives me all the feels every time I hear.
I know. Yeah.
Seriously. And I know you got to see Hamilton, right?
I did. I went to Chicago with my sister, my husband and his two sisters, my one sister's husband and the other sister's boyfriend. And the six of us, we left my kids with his mm-hmm. parents and we drove to Chicago last March, like after my son mm-hmm. turned one. And we left our kids with his parents and drove to Chicago. The six of us rented an Airbnb for like four
That's
days.
Amazing.
And we just like hung out in Chicago and did cool stuff and went to see Hamilton and like it was so much
yeah
fun.
And I'm sure like especially because you have that like musical theater background, I'm sure that like you were just like in
oh,
it
gosh,
and
died.
Like
it was so
life-changing.
And I'm like I don't consider myself like a musical theater kind of person. Like there are musicals that I
right.
love, and I love like stage shows, and there are musicals that I absolutely love, but like I'm not like into traditional, like I don't like Les
gotcha.
Mis. Don't tell
oh.
me. Okay. I don't like Les Mis. I don't. And I don't like Phantom of the Opera, and like the like traditional classic musicals are like not my thing. But I loved, like I got introduced to Rent as a 13-year-old
oh my gosh.
kid, and I like wore out the CD.
Yeah, I got to see Rent in maybe 2008 when it was on Broadway. It was like I was in jazz
yeah.
band, and we went every summer and we would see a Broadway show.
That's
and so,
so
we saw
cool.
Rent, and I was like, oh my gosh, especially coming from like a very sheltered like Christian background at that time, like Rent was
mm-hmm.
so good.
Real
and like
yeah.
and I was like, all right, I'm done, I love this.
Like, yeah, it's so good. Yeah, so like Rent and
yes.
Wicked and Hamilton, and I saw Once on Broadway with Arthur Darvill from
oh
Doctor
my gosh.
Who in it. And I was like 6 months pregnant. I was just like crying the entire time. It was so good though. The stage show, as much as I love the
yeah,
musical,
the movie.
The mm-hmm. movie is actually better on stage, which I didn't think it would be, but it was so beautiful and fantastic.
That's amazing. I love Once too. That's like one of my top 10 all-time favorite movies, I think.
Oh my gosh, the music is so
yeah,
good.
Just like Glenn Hansard and his voice and how like
and his face,
his face,
beard,
his butt, his everything.
Guitar that could fall apart at any moment.
Yes, the guitar with the hole in it is. There's just something about it. You're like, yeah,
it's
this guy's been through some shit.
He's legit.
I love it. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Well, I'm glad. I'm glad we have so many things in common and so many things.
Yeah,
different
too.
And we'll definitely have to do this again because this was fantastic.
All right.
Yeah.
Thanks for
being on. I hope you have a great rest of your day, Anna. Thanks. Bye.
Ugh, wasn't that so good? Thank you so much for listening to this episode and joining us on Darling Rage Nation. As always, you can listen to other episodes in the Rad as Fuck Women series and more on my station, Darling Rage Nation, on anchor.fm and also on iTunes. You can also find me and hang out on Instagram at The Darling Rage. Can't wait to see you there. Till then, rage on, darlings.